Well, Congressman Goodlatte, I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Well, glad to be with you and your listeners.
It's crunch time as we're heading into the final 2 weeks of the campaign. What is your closing argument to voters, and is there a chance for another debate between you and your opponent, Kai Degner?
Well, we had a very good debate. It was live streamed across the entire district, and because it is so late, I doubt that there will be another one scheduled in the last 2 weeks. Now is the time for the candidates to reach out to the voters with their message about what they will do in the next term of the United States House of Representatives. I look forward to communicating with my voters as I do throughout the year. I meet with them on a regular basis. I visit businesses and schools and civic organizations all throughout each year and listen to their concerns. But then I take that information and carry their values to Washington, D.C., where I think that I represent their desire to have limited government, individual responsibility, free enterprise, smaller government, more decentralized government, lower taxes, less government regulation, a strong national defense, strong families. And I will continue to do that. I am especially emphasizing right now the work of an agenda that we have worked on in the House of Representatives for the past year called the Better Way Agenda. And it deals with six major areas, including things like tax reform, which is, I think, vitally important to encourage more investment in the United States. American companies earn literally trillions of dollars over time that is parked outside the United States that needs to be encouraged to be brought back into this country and invested here rather than deciding, well, because the tax rates are so high, we're going to invest in other countries around the world. We have the highest tax rate of all of the developed countries in the world. We've got to change that. Secondly, we need to repeal Obamacare. It's proved to be a disaster. We saw that as evidence again yesterday when the administration announced that expected rates increasing for this coming year are in the range of 25%. That is totally unsustainable. We need to replace it with healthcare reforms that are more patient-centered, that give patients more choices and promote more competition.
The uninsured rate has gone down to 11% in the last few years since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. That's down from 18%. That's about a 33% decrease. Given that there are problems with the Affordable Care Act, isn't that a good thing that the uninsured rate has come down, and isn't that something that can be salvaged without scrapping the entire program? Isn't there a way to reform it, working with other Republicans and Democrats in Congress?
I think you have to scrap the entire program and look at other ways to help people get health insurance. And the reason is this. What has been accomplished with Obamacare, with some more people getting health insurance, has been at a tremendous price. The price has both been in terms of the choice that individuals and businesses who provide health insurance to their employees have to make. Those have been very tightly limited because the government has simply stepped in and mandated that all kinds of things have to be covered by all health insurance. And the result of that is that instead of a business being able to look and say, well, this is how much I can afford for my employees, they now have a much higher hill to climb. If they're a small business, more and more of them, they're below the limits, are determining they simply can't afford to provide health insurance, putting it over on the individual. The individual then has to go into what are called exchanges. The exchanges are not affordable. The government is trying to use taxpayer dollars that were not dedicated for this purpose to provide this. So the cost is going up not only to individuals and businesses, but also to the government itself. That is currently being litigated in the courts. Yet again, another example of Obamacare's unintended consequences and why we need to do things like allow people to choose health insurance plans from across the country, not just in the area where they are living. We need to do things like have medical liability reform, something that President Obama promised but has never delivered upon. It was not included in Obamacare when it was finally brought forward. And one of the reasons why I and a great many other people in the Congress voted against it at the outset and why we've continued to vote to repeal it. There are a few good things in there, one of which already existed prior to Obamacare, and that is community health centers. We have one here in Harrisonburg. We have more around the country. It did increase funding for that, and I would certainly continue that. Why? Because the value that the taxpayer receives for the amount of care that's provided, primary care to many millions of Americans, is a very, very good way to provide an important component of health care to a lot of people. We have those around the 6th District. We have them around the country, and we should encourage them to continue. Obamacare didn't create them, but it did expand them, and I would keep that expansion.
Well, there's another provision in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that is fairly popular. That is getting rid of pre-existing conditions for health care. Another provision was allowing children, I think up to the age of 26, to be on their parents' health care policies. Is that something you would keep in there?
Well, I wouldn't keep those, but I would go about reforming healthcare in such a way that people are incentivized to be able to keep their children on their plans. And with regard to pre-existing conditions, both of the Republican alternative plans that have been offered for years now and the Republican Better Way agenda plan that is available online right now at abetterway.gop, all provide for protection against pre-existing condition exclusions.
Can you tell me more about your push for a criminal justice reform bill in Congress? Why is that important, and what do you think needs to be done?
Well, it is important because our criminal justice system hasn't been reviewed in a comprehensive way in more than 40 years. And when I became chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, I set about to do just that. I set up a task force called Overcriminalization of Federal Law. It held more than 10 hearings on this important issue and made recommendations. In this Congress, I've worked with the Democratic leader on the committee, the ranking member, John Conyers from Michigan, and we've now produced 11 bills out of the Judiciary Committee dealing with everything from prison reform, prison reentry, sentencing reform, civil asset forfeiture reform, policing strategies reforms, making sure that forensics and other advanced technologies are more readily available to solve crimes and to make sure that the innocent are shown to be innocent and therefore not charged with crimes or convicted, which is one of the worst things that can happen when the innocent are wrongly convicted of something. And finally, to also include making sure that with now 5,000 separate, distinct federal criminal statutes and hundreds of thousands of regulations for which one can be charged with a felony, that the government be required to show, if there's no set forth requirement in a statute, the government be required to show that an individual had a criminal intent, that they knew they were violating the law. When you have thousands of things like that, no one knows what all those laws are. So there should be a standard for that. All of those things have passed out of the committee with a bipartisan vote, and they're ready to go to the floor of the House of Representatives. We've been working very hard in a bipartisan fashion to get the leadership to agree to put them on the floor. Mr. Conyers and I are optimistic that that will occur in the closing days of this Congress. If for any reason it doesn't, we should bring them right back forward in the next Congress and push ahead. It's so important in terms of people receiving justice. It's so important in terms of making sure that with people who are sentenced to prison come out, and 90% of them are going to come back out again, that they have a better opportunity to not recidivate, not fall back into a life of crime, but be productive members of society. All of these things, I think, are important, and I think there is strong support across the board, from liberals to conservatives, who want to see this done.
You have been consistent in your support for Donald Trump as president. What is it in him that you see as worthy of your support?
Well, number one is my total rejection of Hillary Clinton as a candidate for president of the United States. She would continue the leftward march that Barack Obama has taken this country in for the last 8 years. But even more seriously, in addition to that, she would bring the crony corruption that has followed her throughout her time in Washington, D.C., and it has grown more and more serious when she is held to be above the law and not prosecuted for crimes like violating the Espionage Act, that people who are not in the position that she's in are prosecuted for, when there are cover-ups taking place as a result of that, that to me is a very serious problem. Now, with regard to Donald Trump, I don't agree with all of his positions, and I certainly do not condone some of the things that he has said. However, when you look at his list of people that he would nominate for the United States Supreme Court, one of the most important issues in this election that's overlooked, I think, on a day-to-day basis, and consider that the next president is going to dictate the course of the United States Supreme Court, not for the next 4 years, but for the next generation. And when you look at the excellent individual that he selected as his running mate for Vice President, Mike Pence, who I know well, who served on the House Judiciary Committee with me for many years, I have confidence that he is going to show leadership, that he's going to fight for this country, that he's going to be strong on national security, and that he is someone who is going to stand up and make sure that we have the opportunity to grow our economy by dealing on a fairer basis with other countries that we trade with around the world than we've had in recent years.
I do want to ask you about what you're talking about there in the last part of your answer, perhaps as his role as head of state, not so much as head of government, and as representing the United States to the rest of the world. Just over the weekend, Mr. Trump criticized the U.S. military effort in Mosul, saying that it makes us look so dumb while American troops are in harm's way. He's shown support for Vladimir Putin of Russia. He tends to spend days hitting back at people who sort of get under his skin. He's called for illegal policies such as waterboarding and for killing the family members of suspected terrorists. Does any of that give you pause in supporting him? And if so, why not support another conservative candidate who is on the ballot in Virginia, Evan McMullen?
Well, first of all, this is a binary election. Only two candidates have the opportunity to win this election, and the third-party candidates who are running do not have that opportunity.
Well, isn't that up to the voters, though?
It is up to the voters, but it's very plain that the voters overwhelmingly support one of the two major party candidates, and anyone else who's on the ballot is simply taking votes away from one of those two candidates, and therefore not affecting the choice for themselves, but only which of the other two candidates wins. But with regard to foreign policy, well, I certainly, as I've said, don't agree with all the positions that Mr. Trump has taken. I am very strongly opposed to the foreign policy that was led by Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. And much of the crisis that we have in the Middle East today can be laid at her doorstep, including some of the tragic decisions that were made with regard to our policies in North Africa, which resulted in the death of our ambassador and three other great Americans, and the decisions with regard to ISIS, which unfortunately President Obama characterized as the junior varsity team. That is no way to go about dealing with a reality that was caused by his decision to pull troops out of Iraq so that we had no base there from which to stop the rapid growth that took place with ISIS a few years ago, and now we're having to contend with in a much different way.
Well, I don't want to relitigate the Iraq war, but wasn't that decision to pull troops out negotiated during the Bush administration, and there would have been a whole different set of things that would have had to happen in our negotiations with Iraq in order for President Obama to make sure that troops could stay in Iraq. I'm not sure it's fair to say that he was completely responsible for that.
I think the decision was in his hands and that he should have been working very hard to make sure that that did not take place because of all of the investment that was made in lives, in dollars, to simply pull it out and think that the situation in Western Iraq was not related to what was going on elsewhere in the region and not to maintain that kind of ability to suppress something rapidly rather than see it go out of control.
If, in your view, the election is basically a binary election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, the voters will make the decision on November 8th, but She is leading in most of the battleground polls at this moment. So just supposing if she becomes president of the United States and if you are reelected as congressman from the 6th District, can you see yourself working with her? And what opportunities do you see for cooperation between Congress and the White House?
Well, certainly some of the things I've outlined already would be matters that we would hope that she would pick up where President Obama left off, like criminal justice reform. And I would point out that during the time that I have been chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, there's been a Democrat in the White House the whole time. So there are lots of things that we disagree on, but notwithstanding that, the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives has produced 48 bills that have been signed into law by President Obama. So we've worked with him on a whole host of things, from the USA Freedom Act to CARA reforms dealing with opioid abuse. Just to name two, a third one would be the situation with taxation of access to the Internet, something that we've had a temporary moratorium on for years, but I've had legislation to make it permanent. That finally was passed through the House and the Senate and signed into law by President Obama earlier this year. So there are many examples of instances where I can work with whoever's in the White House, and will certainly continue to do that.
Immigration reform is, again, this year a big topic for national discussion. I know you've been working on some smaller pieces of immigration reform. What do you think are the prospects for Republicans and Democrats agreeing on a comprehensive immigration reform bill, something like the bipartisan bill that passed the U.S. Senate in 2013 but died in the House? And are you open to some kind of legal status, at least for the so-called dreamers, those who were brought to this country as children?
Well, first of all, that legislation failed of its own weight. Many of the people who actually supported it in the Senate later withdrew their support for it. So we have to take a different approach. I recognized that back then, and that's why we took and continue to take in the House a step-by-step approach to immigration reform, starting with enforcement of the law. I think the biggest problem that immigration reform has today is that people see this government as not enforcing our immigration laws. And as a result of that, there's tremendous mistrust with the administration. So I hope whoever's elected president is going to take a different approach to that and start with the premise that while we're a nation of immigrants, there isn't a person who is a citizen of the United States who can't go back a few generations or several generations and find at least someone in their family who came to this country to better their lives for themselves or their family. But it is also a nation of laws, and respect for the rule of law is what is really lacking in our immigration policy today. So the House Judiciary Committee has worked very hard to pass bills out of the committee that address that. And at least one has been signed into law by President Obama. There are others that have passed through the House of Representatives and sit over in the United States Senate. Next, you have to deal with legal immigration. There are many important legal immigration programs that are not working the way they were intended. And the committee has passed out of its jurisdiction, bills to reform our legal immigration program. I think only when you have done those would it be appropriate to look at what kind of status we should have for some of the people who are not lawfully present in the United States. Until you rebuild the trust of the American people that our laws are going to be enforced and that people who abide by our laws and go through a legal immigration process are being handled in an appropriate fashion, which in my opinion they are not today, should you look at the fact that people have broken the laws and entered the country illegally.
I want to get back to something that you said during the debate with Kai Degner and that you reiterated at the beginning of our conversation today, and that was that your constituents in the 6th District are conservative.
A majority of them are. I'm certain not, okay. Certainly not saying all of them are.
Well, that's my question is then how do you reach out to, if not a majority of your constituents, certainly many of them who may see a larger role for government in things such as health care or gun control and may not consider themselves conservative?
Well, I represent my constituents, and that means reflecting the views of a majority of them, but I also have to represent my constituents from the standpoint of my own conscience, what I think is the right thing to do. And I think that is something that I work very hard to do every day. I, as I indicated, listen to my constituents. I have telephone town hall meetings. I have other community meetings with different groups and organizations. Just recently, I attended a Stop the Violence program that was sponsored by the mayor of Roanoke and the new police chief in Roanoke to hear ideas about how we can make sure that these very unfortunate police shootings that have taken place, both shootings where officers have sometimes done things under questionable circumstances, and in other instances where people have actually shot and murdered police officers, totally the wrong way to address this problem. So in that regard, I worked with John Conyers, the ranking Democrat on the committee, to establish a task force, a working group of six members on the Republican side and six members on the Democratic side. About half are members of the Judiciary Committee, half are in the House of Representatives, but not on the committee. We've traveled to Detroit. We've held roundtable discussions in Washington. We're right now planning a visit to Atlanta, and we're working very hard to promote a dialogue across the country, but it really has to take place community by community of people working with each other, community leaders, police officers, local elected officials, sheriffs, people in the African-American community where a lot of this is focused. They all need to come together, share their concerns, share their ideas, and come up with ways to make sure that this is brought around to a situation where people have respect for each other and people have respect for law enforcement, which is designed to keep people safe, but they can't do as good a job keeping people safe when they have a situation where individuals are shooting at police and not allowing them the opportunity to do their job in some communities.
Congressman Goodlatte, thank you very much for taking the time today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you.